The European Super League. Hello and welcome to episode 31 of this season's Real Football Cast. As always, I'm your host Dan Tracy, and in the next 60 minutes, we'll be dissecting all the hot topics in football. As per usual, we'll be discussing what's been going on in the Premier League over the past few days. While in addition to that, there are also some off-pitch activities that have caught our eye and they'll be getting our attention in the next hour. It's been another incredible week of football, and this week it's two up top. That means leading the line and wearing the captain's armband is Carl. So Carl, how have you been since we spoke a fortnight ago?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, and even at the end of the weekend then I was okay. And then all of a sudden football's decided to have just a sort of mass 24-hour burst and meltdown, and everything's in chaos at the moment. But other than that, yeah, pretty good, thanks, mate.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're here, and I'm also glad that you're joining me for what is probably the maddest 24 hours of football. And I know, Matthew, obviously you're joining me as well, but I believe you said that in a tweet the other day, and I think you're absolutely right. So how have you been, my friend?
I've been pretty okay. I mean, any excuse not to talk about the impending relegation that is Fulham, I just didn't expect it to be news of this nature.
Okay, yeah, it's got you out of that grind for a week. I don't think we'll chat about any football matches-wise. So if you are listening, if you wanted a review of the Premier League action as per, it's not going to happen, unfortunately. Other podcasts are available, but other podcasts are probably chatting about the same topic, if we're honest. So before we chat about that elephant in the room, I'll do the social media bits first. If you want to get in touch with me, you can. That's on Twitter, at DanTracy1983. Also, the podcast has its own account, which is at Real Football Pod. If you want to become a shareholder, all you need to do is follow and join our very elite members club. Talking of clubs, I'm delighted to announce that we're now part of the UK's first ever sports podcast network, that being Sports Social. Check out the URL on my Twitter page, which is at Real Football Pod, and plenty of links there throughout the week. You can find me via iTunes by searching for Real Football Cast. If you use that platform, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if you like us, leave a review so we move up the league table. And I need to mention my two content partners. For betting tips and predictions, go to betting.com. For thought pieces and opinion, go to nowsport.com. And the easiest way to find all the links is by going to linktree.com/realfootballcast. Put a dot between the R and the E, and that opens up 10, yes, 10 podcast platforms. It's never been easier to listen to the show. Right, it's time to go live. And where should we go first? Well, there's only one place we can go, and that is, well, I don't know where it is exactly, but I know the topic, and that is talk of the European Super League. Now, only 3 weeks ago, we discussed on the show Champions League expansion and the damage it could do for the game. Carl, that damage would look minuscule compared to what has been proposed over the past few days.
Yeah, we said when we spoke about that, didn't we, Dan, that, you know, was this the first steps to potentially bring in, you know, a Super League in? And was this the first attempt of the top clubs to try and get themselves broken away? We kind of then said, well, hopefully this might just be more games in that Champions League format. And then obviously, you know, now the news has broke and you assume that, you know, this has been in the pipeline for a little while with these clubs looking at this idea that, you know, that they all do want to break away. And not necessarily, I suppose, essentially, they don't want to break away immediately, do they? But you kind of assume that the ultimate end game is that these guys will then have their own league, where I don't think they get involved in domestic football because they think there'll be more money and more profit to be made by being in this sort of league. And that's the worry, I think, isn't it? You know, as to where this goes, because my fear is what it starts as, which I'm sure there'll be some compromise, because we've kind of seen, haven't we, these guys, this doesn't just seem to be a threat to UEFA to try and sort themselves out and revamp the Champions League. I think the way this is looking and what we're seeing, these teams are serious to form their own league and kind of get away here and start making their own money. So the worry will be is where is it in a few years' time? Because they might start off by essentially still being in the domestic leagues. I can't see it ending that way. And then obviously that brings into play what happens for domestic football, because, you know, that could just send domestic football into a massive black hole, couldn't it? Where, you know, the fact that that sort of revenue isn't dropping down the way it does at the moment, then that could leave the game in chaos. It's not great. I don't think any of us, anybody wants this. I think if you was to ask 100 people, as you know, 100 people would say, no, we don't want it. I don't think certain people within clubs want it. I don't think players probably want it. You know, we're hearing, you know, a few players, you know, Milner's come out, didn't he, and said, you know, this is not what we're after. I can't believe anyone else wants it apart from the owners of these clubs who stand to make a lot of money from this.
Well, Matthew, there was always going to be a backlash. There was no doubt about that. And I think the Big Six were ready for such a furore. On this scale, perhaps not, but there's reports within the last hour an unnamed of those six is getting a bit jittery. Now, do they have to hold firm if they really want to proceed with these plans, or will this firefight that's now going on within football be enough to put out the flames and dampen such talk of a Super League?
I think it might be. I think Jamie Carragher said in his point on Sky Sports yesterday, you know, that as soon as one club gets out of it, you know, that might start the domino effect, because once they lose, you know, in this scenario where, and we're taking out the whole FIFA, UEFA, players can't play for their country, everything, if we just ignore that and say, yes, the big name players are still there. Say, you know, Man City or Barcelona drop out, and all of a sudden, Kevin De Bruyne, Raheem Sterling, / Lionel Messi, / Olela, once the draw of that, you know, gets taken away, it sort of diminishes the whole European, it diminishes the whole idea, because, you know, what was the statement, you know, the best players, the best team every single week. Well, when you take out one of those big teams and one of those big name players, it kind of diminishes it. But even if that is the case and one team does, well, the damage has already been done, because, and I know this has been a sort of a feeling on Twitter, on social media rather, over the past couple of, you know, the past couple of hours and days over it, is that, you know, let's not forget who these six were. You know, these people have already burned their bridges. They've already said, you know, we don't want to do this. It's the best way to think about it is the way, you know, Ed Woodward and Man United have taken out their places from the European Club Association, and Ed Woodward has stepped off from his role within UEFA. Like, we already know that's a big enough statement. The way I sort of compared it was, you know, when there was talk about Brexit, for instance, I knew there was always the chance that something might happen, but I didn't think it would. But then as soon as Boris Johnson says, oh, I'm backing Brexit, that was the moment I personally felt, hang on, this, you know, things just got serious. And then when the Sun backed Brexit, I thought, hang on, powerful newspaper backs it, right, we're actually getting somewhere now. That was the same sort of thing. Once Ed Woodward stepped down, that was the moment I felt, crikey, this is actually going to get some legs. So I think, you know, the damage has already been done. And even if the Super League does, you know, falter out into nothing, I don't, you know, the PR that's come off the back of it, whilst the Premier League, no, the clubs rather, have said that they were willing to take some backlash, I don't think they're really going to be ready for, you know, what's coming up. You know, thank the Lord there are no fans in ground at this point, because we saw what happened at Elland Road last night and the protests there. If there were fans in ground this weekend and all the backlash, you know, talking about the Carling Cup, Carabao Cup final this Sunday, can you imagine what the fury would be? You know, the Man City fans and the Tottenham fans, if they were all, you know, if it was, you know, a packed Wembley Stadium, they all had their chance to voice, it would be, you know, unbelievable. So I do think that even if they do back out, there is not going to be, the backlash from it is not going to go away anytime soon.
Well, this is it, Carl. They've almost kind of marked their card already to the point where they have to see this through. Whether they do or not, it's still up in the air. You know, we don't want it to happen, but these clubs are thinking, oh God, actually, we are persona non grata in football. And now the Premier League sees, shall we say, a civil war. You've got the haves and the have-nots, 14 versus 6. Do these 14 need to finally stand tall and say, look, enough is enough. If you want to go and play in your private league, you go, but you never come back. And although it may diminish the Premier League as we know it, it stops this halfway house or the Big Six having their cake and trying to eat it.
Yeah, it's a real hard one, isn't it, Dan, this? Because, like I say, I was listening to radio this morning and a Burnley fan was on saying that, you know, that they felt that the Premier League should kick these six clubs out. I guess the biggest problem with that is that if you take these clubs out of the Premier League, what's left? And what happens to the Premier League? Because, let's face it, no disrespect to the clubs that will be left, but no one's fighting for TV rights, are they, for Burnley v Brighton? There's no interest worldwide for that sort of game. And unfortunately, if the Big Six are suddenly out of the Premier League, then the rest of the teams will all suffer as well, because that just becomes, if you like, a glorified version of the Championship. And the worldwide interest is gone and the money's gone. And then suddenly, can those clubs survive like that? So it's a real, for a lot of those clubs, in my opinion, this is a real sort of hard place to be, because yes, you're not happy, and yes, those 14 remaining clubs probably need to stand strong and try to get, you know, some sort of compromise that works for everyone. But you can't cut your nose off to spite your face, can you? Because if you demand that these six are removed from the Premier League, then unfortunately, you're basically starting the downfall of your own club, possibly. So I really think this is all about, you know, yes, they've got to kind of, you know, let it be known they're not happy, and quite rightly, because as we say, this should be about fair competition. You know, what's to say that in 3 years' time, Fulham couldn't work their way up and suddenly gate crash the top six and potentially, you know, be challenging for Champions League place on a regular basis, you know, if the right investment was there. Whereas all of a sudden you're pulling the rug from these teams, aren't you, and saying, well, listen, you're not here now, and unfortunately you'll never get there. And one of the things that keeps football brilliant is that every year we're looking for that underdog side that might be about to upset the big boys and get themselves in there. And all of a sudden you basically have seasons where, you know, well, that isn't going to happen. You know, that those teams are already there. And it doesn't matter how good a season Fulham have, because even if they finish third and Liverpool and Spurs and Arsenal finish 10th, 11th and 12th, they're not going to outgun them, because those sides are quite happy in the knowledge that, yeah, we've had a bad season, we haven't done well in the league, but we're in the Super League next year and we're getting our big, massive money. But that is the problem, isn't it? There's just got to be, if this is going to go ahead, and I feel these owners, unfortunately, are not owners who are going to back down. I don't think they're going to be scared of the backlash, because all they're interested in is looking at the bottom line. And if the bottom line is 300-400 million, a few fans being unhappy, and when I say a few fans, obviously world football fans being unhappy, I still just think for these guys, they're not interested, they don't care, they're not supporters, they don't care about the supporters. Sky came out, didn't they, saying that, you know, one of these board members said, yeah, look, listen, fans, we don't really care about the fans in this, it's not about the fans, this is about money and what can be made from this. And ultimately, that's all that's going to matter to these guys. But the 14 have got to try to make a stand. But obviously, you know, I think if they were asking for these clubs to be removed from domestic football, I think, unfortunately, they'd be signing their own kind of death warrants, potentially.
Well, Matthew, if we expand on that concept, that is it fair to say that some football clubs, these clubs that are going into the league and a few others, let's add Bayern Munich, PSG into the mix, are they too big for the framework in which football allows them to sit in? You know, obviously we're all against these plans, but if they were to happen, do they need to simply break away, create, shall we call it, franchise football, be its own entity, which is not anything to do with any pyramids or structures elsewhere, and then just let the rest get on with it? Yes, it would be to a lesser standard, but within 10, 15 years, it would find its sort of recalibration. It wouldn't be at the heights that we know it and we've loved in the past, but at least it would find its own natural level. Is that a path that it needs to tread if it was going to go in that direction?
Yeah, I think it does. I know all this talk about, you know, the leagues, they don't want to break away from their domestic league. This is just effectively a replacement for the Champions League and a way to get more money out of that. But I think if they are going to go with it, they do have to go the whole hog, in effect. You know, there's always, they don't want to, but if the Premier League don't want them to, then they may have to break away from the Premier League. And I've no idea what the rules are with La Liga and the Bundesliga and Serie A and Liga and everything like that. They may have different rules, but I know the Premier League is the whole, you can't do it without our permission, so you may have to leave, sort of thing. But I do, so if they do go for it, they do have, it is going to have to be a complete break, in effect. And yeah, it may sort of create a god tier, as it were. You know, if you look at the top five leagues now are effectively tier A, you know, and then just break them away, and then that's just going to be tier A plus effectively. I think there is something for it. Again, I'm not necessarily a fan of it, but I do think that it would sort of make sense. You know, just take a clean break and just, as you said, restart everything. It may take a while for it to become normal and everything, but you know, there will be kids growing up, which is what the, you know, which is what the part of these proposals are. You know, no one under the age of 18 cares about club football. They only care about players. It was something along those lines. There will be kids that are like 5 and 6 now that will grow up just with the Super League, and it will be normal to them. Obviously, the old people, crikey, I'm only 29, we'll have the things of, it didn't used to be the Premier League, it used to be Division 1 back in my day, and all that sort of thing. You'll get that, but it'll be two levels, but it'll be understandable, and you could get past it. But yeah, it would seem unnatural to start with, but eventually it would just become the norm.
Yeah, if this was to happen, and it's a very big if, I think it has to be the cleanest of breaks. You can't be dipping into the Premier League and get your nose in that trough as well and all those domestic cups. If you want to be a franchise, go and be a franchise. Football will balance itself out eventually. It will morph and change, but you can't sort of be, I want to be all things to all people. You know, it's just not possible. But Cole, if we come to the conclusion that American owners are driving this, they're not the only entity that are driving this, but they are the main players. When you look at the Premier League, there's other American owners that aren't part of the Big Six, and one of those is brand new at Burnley. So when you consider that that's a club that now had, what, $40 million in cash in the bank and has now been taken over in a mechanism of debt leverage, their owners are going to be thinking, Christ, we've got this one completely wrong, because now they're up the up shit row of paddle, really, aren't they? Because their finances don't look as steady all of a sudden.
Yeah, you can imagine those people have probably done financial plans over the next 5 to 10 to 15 to 20 years, haven't you? Based on, well, look, this could be the profit and the earnings we'll make. And as you say, if this comes in, you know, it'd be like buying a new petrol car, wouldn't it? And finding out the next day that no one's selling petrol anymore and everyone's gone to electric. And you're like, oh, right, brilliant, thanks for that. I'm now stuck with this big investment. And now someone's basically just gone and made that, not worthless, but potentially I'm going to get nowhere near the sort of money I have got. So yes, you know, there's going to be instances like that, isn't there? There's going to be these clubs that you kind of go, oh, you know, well, and this is where I say, like, you know, unfortunately for these clubs, if you remove the top six from that picture, then it's a bit of a bleak future. Or as you say, although it'll steady it out, initially it's going to be a bit of a bleak future, because if you took, it's like if you took Celtic and Rangers out of the Scottish League.
Yep.
There's no interest in that then, is there? It's just a grim thought that there's no Celtic and Rangers in that league. And then you kind of see that league just kind of dwindles away. And I think it would be the same if you took these six out of the Premier League all of a sudden. You know, there'd still be some big clubs in there, don't get me wrong. But you've removed the icons and you've removed the teams that people the world over will support, and the fact that they're in another league means they'll still support them, but they're just not showing an interest in your in the brand that you're in anymore, and that brand eventually will suffer. So you can imagine that Burnley are sitting there thinking, oh God, we do need to try and stop this, because we've built our future based on this Premier League. But at the same time, I would say that if tomorrow one of those top six pulled out and the offer was put to any of the other 14 clubs, I'm telling you now, their owners would be snapping that position up and joining those five pretty quickly, I'm sure.
Well, you only have to look at Everton's statement today, Tuesday. Obviously damning of the Big Six, and rightly so. But as you say, Carl, if someone knocks on Fahad Mashiri's door and says, actually, Liverpool don't fancy it anymore, do you want their invite? Let's be honest, that statement becomes just words, doesn't it, Matthew? But Matthew, you also know about American ownership as much as anyone, really, what with Fulham being run by the Khans. What do you reckon the conversation is within the Fulham camp? Do you reckon they're going to be a bit envious and thought, ah, bollocks, we can't get our hands on this?
Yeah, I think there is some element. Again, it's a notion that I've seen bandied around Twitter. I know some people have been commenting about Newcastle and, you know, their takeover thing, and Mike Ashley, you know, perceived to be interested in, you know, keeping the value of Newcastle before he can sell, all that sort of thing. Again, And if Newcastle were in this Super League, then it might, you know, make the, you know, the option of selling it so he can move on more appealing sort of thing. So I do think there is that element, and again, it is part of the thing, you know, if your club was offered the chance, would you know, most of the owners, because this is what it is for, it is for the money, would they be willing to take it? I think most clubs probably would. I think it is a touch of jealousy that they haven't been perceived as, you know, important enough. And we know what, you know, there's been the jokes with Gary Neville about how, you know, how dare Arsenal and Spurs be considered big enough for this because of, you know, their lack of European success and what have you. You know, whereas you have the likes of, you know, there have been clubs who have been more successful in the past sort of thing. I can sort of get that. But yeah, in terms of follow-up, I don't think they would ever. We know that we're not big enough, and I'm pretty sure the Cards know that we're not big enough to be sort of any part of this. I mean, if we were to sign up for this, we would be the whipping boys of the league for the best part of 2 to 3 years, sort of as we are in the Premier League right now. But yeah, I don't think there would be any sort of consideration from the Cards personally, to join this league. They want the club to be bigger, but I don't think they I don't even think they would envision a club making that sort of jump right now.
Okay then, Carl, let's get to a new buzzword which has entered football's lexicon over the last couple of days, a legacy fan. I didn't know what one was, but we all seem to be one here on the show, which means when you look at such a term and the support and the direction that it's going with this potential Super League, I guess this Super League isn't really designed for you or I or Matthew, is it?
No, definitely not. It's not for us old fogies, is it?
No.
Who, as Matthew said, remember the Championship and what we rightly say, the good old days. But there is some truth in this thing, isn't there? Because, like we touched on it just earlier, if I look at, you know, and I'd say, sit there and say, my son and my wife's sister's son, they are supporters of football. They like football, but they're more interested in Ronaldo, Messi. So, as I've kind of joked with them before and said, listen, you know, they're all buying Juventus kits at the moment. They had Real Madrid kits before that. And I've joked with them and said, well, listen, if Ronaldo signed for Wycombe Wanderers tomorrow, they'd all want Wycombe Wanderers kits. So there is some truth in this element, I think, that, you know, modern supporters and these kids growing up are becoming more kind of icon supporters rather than football club supporters. You know, they pick an icon, Ronaldo, Messi, Mbappe, you know, Kane, players like that, and they're really interested in that player. And if he went to Man City the following week, they probably would say, well, I'm interested in Man City now because my favourite player's there. So I can see some understanding of this so-called, you know, a legacy fan. You know, I think we're growing up where there are fans who are picking, you know, we've got it, haven't we, Dan? When you look at PSG all of a sudden. You know, you've got people buying PSG kits now just because Pochettino's their manager and showing an interest in what PSG are doing, where we're sitting there saying, I couldn't give a monkey's what PSG are doing, quite frankly, because I'm a Tottenham supporter, so I don't care if my old manager's gone there because that's yesterday's news. But I think modern supporters and the younger generation are becoming supporters where they get invested in an icon, in a person. And that person becomes someone they follow for their career. You know, it's hard to know anything to say. We're the old fogies now, I think. You know, we're the old school that want the FA Cup to be on a Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock and a full day build up. We want the Champions League final to be a midweek final, you know, that kind of thing. And maybe people are saying, yeah, but you guys now are outdated. You know, that's not what people want. I still think, you know, you can call someone a legacy fan, but I still say now, you went out and asked 100 people and you mixed that number of ages up, I think everyone right now would say, no, we don't want this. We want football left alone at the moment. But again, as we say, everything that evolves around this just comes back to the fact that the people who are trying to push this through and want this through, they don't even care about the people on the street, the fans in the stadium. All they see when they see people sitting in their stadium and people in their club shops are just pound signs walking around, you know, and that's how it's viewed, unfortunately.
So, Matthew, what role has COVID played in all of this? Because you hear the phrase, football is nothing without fans, banded about so many times in so many different sort of reasons. But if there's one thing we've noticed this season, football, unfortunately, is still something without fans. You know, if it was nothing, there'd be no Premier League. We wouldn't be able to see teams play because they couldn't afford to take to the field and all that. But that's not the case because there's too much revenue. So has that kind of woken them up to say, actually, sod the fans, we don't need them? And also, has COVID, on the flip side, put an overall strain on finance? And then they thought, actually, we need to go bigger on this. So a global pandemic doesn't really mix with sport, but when you sort of scratch away at the surface, it might have a big role to play.
Yeah, I'll take the second point first. Yeah. I think that it comes back to sort of finances, because we talked about how these clubs would be earning like £300 million a year, something along those lines, from all this. I don't know if that's like a base payment.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, from just participating. And when you look at the amount of money the clubs have lost because of, you know, no fans in stands and what have you, and the hospitality and everything, so match day spots and everything that goes with it. So if they need to make up that money sooner rather than later, then yeah, this way, again, I don't know how much Man United have lost money in comparison to other clubs. I know like Wolves have lost something like 40 million. So I can't imagine Man United's, you know, 200 million Man United lose, I think, is about right when you consider the size of the club. So if they want to make that money back straight away, then yes, it does make sense. On a financial time, you know, there's been the stat, I can't remember who it was, but I think it was like 14 of the 20 Premier League clubs a couple of seasons ago didn't need fans because the money that they generated from prize money and TV money, you know, they didn't need fans in the stadium. They earned enough without match day revenue, effectively. So if they can see, right, we don't need these fans, you know, if all we're doing is attracting the TV fans, you know, the fans in Asia and America and Australia and South America, then if the home fans turn away from us, then you know what, that's fine. We've had a season without empty stadiums. Yes, the results have been a bit weird, but we can still do it. We can still play. We can still sell advertising around the pitch to whichever sponsor wants to put there, you know, give us some money. And also I think brings back to the first point, when you look around the world and see that there are some stadiums where there are fans in the stadium, you know, like Australia have opened up, you know, there, I don't know if they're 100% capacity, but we've seen the pictures of sports stadiums in Australia being pretty full. America are opening up slower, you know, are ahead of us in terms of fans and stands sort of thing. If they can see, right, in a time like this in COVID, just in case things get bad, we know that we have people that are willing to watch sport. So if Man United v Liverpool, say, rather than be played behind closed doors, you know what? Let's just take it over to Australia. They're all fine. They'll just take it over there. They'll come watch us. So yeah, I think COVID has played a pretty big part in it because it's had a chance to expose the problems that there are in the game and how some people are willing to exploit it.
Well, Carl, it seems the biggest villain in the piece is Florentino Perez. So he's saying that football, as we know it, is dying. Now, you've sort of touched on the next generation of fans, so I won't ask you about that. But in his eyes, why is football dying? Is it because VAR? Is it because of the lack of competitive balance that we already see? Is this kind of just a bit of hyperbole? You know, is the game in rude health or is it in bad health? What do you make of it?
No, I don't think football is dying. I do think things like the Champions League maybe do need a sort of revamp because, you know, I know we're talking about this Super League, but if you actually really look at the Champions League, it's been a closed shop for a little while, hasn't it? In a way, without it being a closed shop. When you year after year look at the teams that are competing in that, it's pretty much the same teams every year anyway, with the odd anomaly thrown in every now and then, you know, Leicester suddenly getting in it because they've had the season of their lives. But all in all, in general, it's normally the same teams that are taking part. The Europa League, I think one of the problems is there's too many games in some of these competitions now. You know, they want more, but I think some of the trouble is there's actually too many. You know, if you look at the Europa League, that, you know, we were in that this year, Dan, and it was a pretty boring competition, in all honesty, wasn't it? Because, you know, most of the top sides in our leagues know they should be able to get through the group stage without a real problem. So it just throws your season into chaos with the Thursday, Sunday, that kind of thing. I don't think football's dying at all. You know, It's hard to say, isn't it? When he says football's dying, I don't really get it, because I don't think it is. I think, you know, and once football opens up again, I think you'll see people will love it, because people just want to be able to get back to going to football. I think, though, this Super League wouldn't help, because there is a novelty right now, isn't there, that, you know, of playing someone like Real Madrid or Barcelona or PSG, because it doesn't come around very often. Now, for me, I think if you have this Super League, I think those fixtures become pretty boring after a little while, if that's happening every season. You know, one of the joys in the Champions League is who you're going to get. Will you face one of the big guns? And then you get those two games against them. Whereas if suddenly every week you're seeing Spurs v Real Madrid, Spurs v Barcelona, Spurs v PSG, Spurs v Bayern, then, oh, we're back again, Barcelona. Then I think it does become a little bit tedious. And you will miss those likes of, you know, Spurs v West Ham. You know, it's the London derbies, you know, all those games. I think the Super League would become a lot more boring quicker to football fans than the domestic game is at the moment. So I don't think it's in bad shape. There's probably a few improvements that can be done. Obviously, in our, you know, VAR is one of them, isn't there? Where, you know, I think we need to get on top of that and sort out how it works and what it does. Because, yes, we've seen lots of decisions this season that kind of turn you off of it completely. And the fact that you score a goal, but then think, oh, can we celebrate? Actually, hang on a minute. Oh, no, there was a big toe offside there, so that's all gone. Those things, I think, need sorting. But I still think the passion is there for the game. And I think once it opens up, you'll see that, because stadiums will be packed to the rafters again as soon as they can be.
Well, let's take the European Super League. Let's assume it opened 5 years ago and Tottenham got to the final in 2019 in the fourth year of its creation. It would just be getting to the final, Cole, wouldn't it? You wouldn't have that amazing Champions League run. You wouldn't have that night in Amsterdam. It would just be kind of like everything you've seen years previous. And I think the game would be a lot worse for that, do you not think?
Yeah, I do. And like as you say, Dan, you'd be in the final against a team you've probably played four or five times.
Exactly.
So, as you say, if we, you know, that Champions League season, we got Liverpool, didn't we? Which was an English club that, you know, although it was still massive for us, we were playing a side that we play on a regular basis, yearly basis. If that had been a Barcelona, Bayern Munich, it would have been an even bigger hype, because you're playing one of the big guns in a big final. But this Super League and that, so there's a couple of teams in the final. Yeah, we've played Barcelona so often now. And that would just kill the actual atmosphere and the build-up to it. The fact is the build-up comes because you're playing one of those big giants that you don't play regularly, you know, and that's part of it. So, yeah, I think, as you say, it wouldn't be as special for me.
Matthew, the beauty of English football is the pyramids. In theory, you could go from its lowest rung and go all the way up through a number of promotions. You look at AFC Wimbledon, started off as a park team pretty much after their own franchise saga, and now they're in league football. You know, it can be done. But if you take away the top tier football and cut it off, does that nullify the dream somewhat?
Somewhat it does, because, again, for the most part, it is a closed shop. But there is also, again, it needs to be sort of as a parameter. I don't think it will apply to many people. But there is the parameter with the Super League that, like, the last three places or last five places are invitees on a yearly basis. So it is possible, in theory, that AFC Wimbledon could continue their march up the thing, you know, march up, you know, keep going on, then 10 years' time, win the Premier League and get invited into the Super League, so then they get to play Barcelona and Real Madrid and everything. But for the most part, yes, I think it does, because once you take away those big clubs, it sort of loses part of its appeal. My only real comparison I can make is, as a Fulham fan, when we first went into the Europa League, the first group stage we got were Roma, you know, big name in European football, Basel, you know, big-ish name in European football, we've been in Champions League many times, and CSKA Sofia. And it was, you know, it was this big thing. Then the second time around, it was FC 20, Odense, and something Krakow in Poland, I can't remember, but that's the point, is the teams weren't the same. It wasn't a big glamour thing. So it kind of lost some of the appeal. It lost some of the appeal for me, and I think some of the fans, because the attendance wasn't great that season. So yeah, it does kind of diminish it, because there are these joy of, yeah, you can go and, you know, you can qualify and like Leicester can go and qualify for the Champions League, and West Ham qualify for the Champions League, and then they'll get to play, the possibility of Barcelona and PSG and Juventus and everything rocking up at the London Stadium. But even if they do that, and the Super League have sort of taken away their thing, all you're really left with is, with no due respect or no disrespect, it's, you've got the champions of Hungary and the champions of Bulgaria. And as much as that is, something to strive for, it's European football, it's the Champions League, it just doesn't quite ring the same as, you could have Barcelona or Real Madrid coming to your ground. So, yeah. So, as I say, it does take it away somewhat, but, well, it's not totally taken away. But, yeah, the appeal does lose massive, massive points.
Okay, Matthew, I'll stay with you, and I'll stay on the topic of Florentino Perez. He's made a lot of announcements in the last 24 hours. One of them was about the length of a football match. He envisaged the potential of the game being shorter. Let's assume, 40-minute halves, 35-minute halves, something like that. If this goes ahead, it's really going to be a product engineered for TV. Maybe not even TV, a streaming service with lots and lots of adverts.
It is. I haven't had a chance to, just because there's been so many different statements to keep track, and I haven't. Was this 35 minutes, but with like a stopped clock in the sort of thing, so whenever the ball goes out of play?
To be honest, I just picked out a number, but if it's going to be shorter, it's going to be somewhere around that for more adverts in it. So if we assume 35-40, his exact words, he wants it to be more like Eurobasket. Obviously, that's like 50-minute quarters. So maybe it would be just be an hour. I don't know. I'm just surmising. But a shorter match, that can't be a good thing, surely.
No, it can't. And my only reason I can think of is because, there's this sort of, they'd have so many more games. Is, again, this would be a player welfare thing. They can't, they want to play 90 minutes. Again, if we're assuming that they take, if they want to play all these games, and again, part of this will be that they will be flying across the world because they won't be tied down to Premier League and La Liga and Serie A rules. So Man United Barcelona will take place in Abu Dhabi, and then they have the return leg in Rio de Janeiro, 3 days later, say. Because it may not be announced, but that's going to happen. So if they want to have all these so many games and have them in so many venues, then if to take away the strain of the players, then they're probably going to look at, let's take the strain away from the players. Let's cut matches down by half an hour so that we can see them every single week rather than being, pulled up with cramps and hamstring injuries from having to play so many games.
Well, you make an interesting point that if they're not affiliated to FIFA, they can make whatever rules they want. So that could be, 11 subs or, 4 from 11. It could be anything. They could set their own template and go with it, which is, an interesting but also quite scary prospect at the same time. But Carl, if we stay on the topic of TV, for the first time, I think Sky Sports are running scared of somebody. Every other broadcast rival has been sort of blown out of the water eventually. Satanta, ESPN... they just never really get close to Sky Sports. BT have had a go at it, but they've never really sort of bloodied their nose. Now, you can see they're visibly worried because of all the comments on their programmes. So, is there an element of hypocrisy in all of this when you consider that they were the integral part of the Premier League being formed 30 years ago?
Yeah, I kind of think ultimately you can sit there and say you don't really have much sympathy for someone like Sky, do you? Because you do sit there and say, well, how many years now have they been ripping people off for subscriptions to watch football? I mean, if you're a business and say like a pub, I know people who run pubs and say that, the monthly fee they have to pay to be able to show games in their pub is absolutely astronomical compared to what it probably costs to be able to get that. So, yes, I have no sympathy for Sky in this, because ultimately there is that kind of thing, isn't it? Is that, well, you started the ball rolling, you push for all this, you've glamorized it so much, you've made it this product that people can't do without, and suddenly all you've done now is, people with lots of money have started going, well, yeah, actually, I fancy some of that pie. And I've actually got the capability of taking a big, big slice of it away from these people. So yes, I have no sympathy for them. Again, Gary Neville, if we look at, say, someone like Gary Neville, Dan, when the way that he's been talking at the moment, there is a little element where, yes, you can agree with a lot of what he says and that. But again, you can sit there and say that this is a guy who, is an owner of Salford City who's pumped lots of money in to kind of gain an advantage over the teams that they've been in leagues with for them. This is a guy who's changed that team's kit away and changed that team's kit colour to kind of make an investor happy. So again, you could sit there and say, you know, yes, I agree with a lot of what Gary Neville says, but then you kind of sort of go, yeah, but, you know, you're not Mr. Pure, White and Innocent here, because you've been someone who's kind of got involved and taken advantage of teams in a league. And then also what cracked me up there a little bit, I mean, we might come to someone like that in a little bit, Dan. I don't know if you're going to touch on someone like Gary Neville. But, yeah, I do think, you know, I've no sympathy for some of these, because they've kind of started the ball rolling. And unfortunately, what you'd always find is when the ball starts rolling, there'll be someone else who shows an interest. And quite often, there might be someone else who comes along with deeper pockets than you.
Well, you mentioned Gary Neville. Luckily, that was going to be my next question to Matthew. So he's obviously trying to be the bastion of virtue in all of this. And as Carl says, there are some good sound bites. You can see the passion about that, but there's an element of actually everything I've invested might go down the toilet also, and my job. So there's that. And also, what do you make of his rather simmering spat with Jurgen Klopp, which is just starting to bubble nicely under the surface?
I think Gary Neville is sort of in a bit of a tough situation, because, you know, and Jamie Carragher sort of, you know, tried to calm it down, because he was the one who sort of brought up the point, you know, let's not forget that Sky did a similar breakaway thing when they established. So they know that they have played a part in this, and they're obviously trying to, you know, they don't want to say anything that will, you know, come across as hypocritical in the eyes of the fans, because as soon as they say, oh, this is terrible, they know that there's going to be plenty of fans to pick up and say, hang on, you are hypocrites because you're part of Sky for the break. So they're trying to do that whilst also trying to toe the company line and not say, oh, Sky are a bunch of horrible bastards who ruin football, sort of thing. They've got to try and balance both sides. So I do sympathize with what Neville said. And on the point of Jurgen Klopp, Someone has obviously taken what was said too far. Yeah, Gary Neville really, he took a stab at "You'll Never Walk Alone" and that whole thing. That wasn't really a proper Jurgen Klopp as such, but obviously Jurgen Klopp has taken it to the extreme, and it was part of the questioning with Sky. You know, everyone's talking about, you know, what do you think of, you know, Jurgen Klopp? It's not his decision and all this, and it's not the player's decision and all this, and everyone making backlash about, you know, the Leeds fans when they protested the club, the Liverpool team bus showing up. Again, this isn't anything really to do with them. This is the people higher up. So I think someone's just picked the wrong fight. Admittedly, it makes for great TV, as Jurgen Klopp, whenever he goes on his rants, always makes for good TV. Same with Gary Neville, same with Jamie Carragher. Always makes great viewing. But I do think it is, when you say it's little rivalry simmering underneath, I think for the most part it is something being made out of nothing for the most part.
Well, I think, to be honest, they're two sides of the same coin, aren't they?
Ben, also, one thing that I do think was funny, and this is not just because he's kind of had a pop at us in this, but, you know, when you've got sort of Gary Neville trying to call on fans and everyone to unite, and then kind of turns around and says that clubs like Spurs and Arsenal are a joke and he'd rather watch teams in San Marino than them, you kind of sit there and go, well, that's a good way to unite people, Gary. You know, he's turn around for two clubs with big supporter bases and mock them and kind of go, yeah, let's all stand together, though, but you two clubs are an absolute farce of a club. So that did crack me up from Gary Neville, because it was a good way to try and call everyone to come to arms and then alienate two clubs that straight away, with people saying, oh, sod you, Gary, you know, thanks for your comments, mate.
Well, that just shows that football tribalism will always be there. No matter how big a uniting force this is, everyone will always take their opportunity to have a dig at somebody else. But, Carl, let's go back to Jurgen Klopp. He said himself in 2019 and recently that he's against any plans for European Super League. But with that said, he's not going to quit his Liverpool job. Does he come across as hypocritical, or are his hands tied in a situation such as this?
No, I think his hands are tied, aren't they, Dan, along with a lot of these top managers? Because let's face it, you know, these guys who are in the elite, they only want the elite jobs, don't they? And not being funny, all the elite are going to be in this Super League. So if Jurgen Klopp suddenly says he's going to resign and he doesn't want to be any part of this, and suddenly the Super League continues, where does he go from there? Who does he manage? from that point, and he's not going to get the kind of elite football that he wants to manage a team in. I do think they're tired. You know, it's the same with the players, isn't it? You know, I've seen a lot of people coming out saying they want to see players coming out and kind of refusing to play and stuff. But that's a bit like standing up in a big mass company meeting, isn't it? And going, I don't agree with anything you're doing here when something comes up. And as workers, you're not in a position to do that. You're not going to come out and do that. You're towing the company line, basically, aren't you? So I do have sympathy for these managers. I'm sure lots of them might not want to be involved, but they're not going to throw themselves under the bus just to kind of because they don't like it. They'll probably express their view, but then if they're told, look, this is happening, they'll get on with it. And it's the same with the players. It's not going to happen. You know, they might be able to come out and say, yes, we're not for this. But if it was to suddenly take place, do you think Kane and people like that are not going to suddenly play in it? Of course they're going to want to play in it because it's going to be the biggest games and the biggest competition with the biggest spotlight, and it will come with the biggest money. So it's a hard one for the players and managers. I just think, unfortunately, they're just going along and you know, what the direction the clubs are going in is being decided away from them and without even anybody caring what their view is.
Well, let's take Bruno Fernandes' comments. Obviously, all very good. It's what you want to hear from players. But as you say, Carl, if this league did go ahead, he's not going to say, oh, leave me behind, I want to play for Aston Villa in the Premier League because I'm noble and I'm altruistic and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's just not going to happen. So it's kind of sound bites, really, but it depends what the actions will be if this goes ahead. But Matthew, one entity hoping it doesn't go ahead are governments. What role can they play in all of this? Because Boris Johnson, in Boris Johnson speakers, aimed to give this the red card. But surely they're powerless to stop such a measure, really. Even if they try and introduce something like 50+1 rule in Germany, how the earth are they going to take Liverpool off, you know, the FSG group and give it back to the fans? Surely it can't happen.
Yeah, and I'm glad you say it can't happen because honestly, I'm not a fan of it. Obviously, you know, I'm not in favour of the European League, but I do think there is some level of, and I remember bringing this point up about when Bury and Bolton were in their problems. You know, like, clubs should be able to run themselves and make their own decisions on things. You know, otherwise it's just one central thing. You know, clubs should be able to run themselves, whether it be for good or bad. You know, I don't think there should be one central force controlling them. And then bringing the government in, I think, is also a bit too much, if I'm being honest. It just doesn't sit right to me. You know, as you say, what is Boris Johnson going to do? He can't force Liverpool to, you know, if he can't force Liverpool and Man United and Man City and everything to give up, you know, 51% of their club to, you know, the supporters' trust, in effect. That's, I mean, he can pressure them. He can say, this is what we want you to do. But I don't think I would ever be comfortable. And again, this may not be the route that we have to go down. But I don't want there to be a case, you know, a vote in the House of Commons to say, right, you know, the eyes to the right say that, you know, Newcastle or Man United have to give up half their club to the supporters' trust. It just doesn't sit right with me. I think they can pressure, but to actually get involved on a political level, I just don't think there should be any sort of interference on that front, personally.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think Dan, yes, mate.
Dan, sorry to go in there as well. Although it's all kind of noble, isn't it? But where were the government when clubs like Portsmouth and Bolton were being taken to the wall by club owners?
Yep.
Yeah, it's all well and good the government wanting to step in now. But again, we know why the government want to step in, because they see money disappearing. You know, where was the government when Bolton were being taken apart and by an owner who was clearly just not right and wanting to do the right things? You know, where were they then to try and step in and say, no, we're not having it, we're not having this, we're not allowing you to do that? It's all of a sudden the government want to step in when they potentially, again, you know, these are people who are trying to be noble, but again, they're only trying to step in because they see a little bit of money disappearing as well.
I'd also say there's probably PR on that point as well, because you've seen that, again, they don't want to be seen as, you know, the bad guys. They've seen that, you know, 99.99% of the country are against this. You don't think that, again, this is politicians being politicians, and I know we're not a political show, but they will jump on anything that will make them popular. That's why there's been so many politicians jumping out and everything saying they're against this, because they know, yeah, because if Boris Johnson came out and said, right, I'm going to allow these clubs to go and join the Super League, I mean, admittedly they're not popular, I mean, leading the polls right now, but that popularity against, you know, football fans would plummet, and you know, Labour would effectively walk the next election if Boris Johnson were to become in favour of it. He doesn't want to do anything that could potentially lose in votes.
Matthew, I'll stay with you, because racism has been another hot topic in football for the last couple of weeks. Now, where's this unity on that topic? When it comes to money, no one can move quick enough to get a press statement out. Racism, everyone buries their head. So I think, really, those pound signs talk far too loud, don't they?
It does, and this was the point that Patrick Bamford brought up last night, you know, if only the clubs were, or the teams, again, I can't remember the words exactly, but if only we were this quick to act and this angry about racism. It, you know, I can't really say, again, it's a bit of a tough one, because, again, we know that racism, there is something that should be done about it, but, again, I think it's the point you bring up. This money just drives so much in the world that, you know, it's the one thing that really connects everyone. So as soon as it, you know, rears its head, that's where most people are going to start popping up, because everyone is in effect affected by money. You know, I say this as a white person. I know this. I've never been affected by racism in any way, shape, or form. You know, Carl, I don't know if you have. Dan, I don't know if you have. But you know, as white people, we have a place in society, as it were. That's probably a poor choice of words, but we've never been affected by it. But everyone in the football world is affected by this. So it's a unifying thing. That's why I think it has been taken down a lot, or taken a lot more seriously, and garnered a lot more attention in my eyes anyway, just because it affects more people.
Yeah, I'd make you right on that topic, but let's talk about the Champions League, because 3 weeks ago we spoke about possible plans. In all of this, they've actually been signed off. So, Carl, with these now being rubber stamped, do you think there'll be the kind of framework for negotiation where UEFA will get these heads around the table and say, look, there's a bit more money in the pot, have some more and come back to our competition? Or do you honestly think it's going to be full steam ahead?
The only thing I can see possibly from this Champions League revamp, Dan, is it delaying things by maybe a couple of years at most. It could be that this revamp and reformat and potentially a little bit more money in the pot being split between all those clubs. I don't know if the rules are still there, that there'll be a protected set of teams in that competition as well, which will also go down well for those teams that will be considered protected. You might see that making a few teams go, oh, OK, yeah, you know, OK, that'll appease us for a little while. I just think potentially there's more money to be had by this Super League, because as Matthew touched on it earlier, you know, these teams, you know, these games won't be taking place when Man United play Barcelona. It won't be at Old Trafford. You know, it'll be in New York. It'll be in Las Vegas, you know, Dubai, those places. So there's a lot of money there to be had, isn't there? And I just don't know if the Champions League can actually match that. Even if they revamp it and introduce some more teams, I'm not sure they'll be able to actually kind of trump the money that might be involved in a Super League. So it could possibly put a stop to it or put a pause on it for a year or so. I still just think ultimately this is where these clubs want to go.
Matthew, the Champions League plans have been panned, really. You know, no one's really taken to them and thought, yeah, amazing. But compared to what we're discussing today, they are at least worse. Now, do you think UEFA will eventually get them back on side and we kind of forget this European Super League chat actually happens, and we kind of go, actually, do you know what? Even though there are a couple of protected teams in the Champions League, things aren't too bad. So are we kind of got one bad option, one super bad option, and we're going to have to take one of them?
Yeah, I think that is the case. It is the lesser of two evils, in effect. And again, it's probably not the way people would have wanted it to happen, but it probably will be the compromise in the end. Will be, yeah, at least, you know, again, at the end of the day, at least in a Champions League, whilst, you know, Man United and everyone, you know, whilst, you know, the teams like West Ham and Leicester can still dream about being in the Champions League, even if that means that a team like fifth has to surrender their place to, or doesn't get in, and someone like Liverpool, who finishes sixth and everything, still gets in, at least it gives those teams, you know, those Aston Villas, those Wolveses, Leicester, Leeds, West Ham. It gives them the chance of being in that top four and getting into the Champions League, rather than, getting into the top four and, as I said earlier, not having the chance to play these big sides, rather than having to play Barcelona, they have to play, Ludogorets, for instance. So again, nothing against Ludogorets, but it still gives them something to aim for rather than the closed shop that has been bandied around when talked about the Super League.
Carl, at the same time, if this league did go ahead, what's to stop another venture capitalist, I don't know, let's say CVC, who own the Six Nations and a bit of Formula One, they can knock on the door of another 18 teams, create another Super League, and then you could see a scenario where the game becomes so fractured that venture capitalists could actually end up buying clubs, and you just transfer from league to league, and you buy all their assets, being the players, and the transfer market could be dissolved. What do you think of that?
What about a potential draft system, Dan?
All that, yeah.
You've got to sit there and start thinking, obviously in the NFL, the team that tanks kind of gets the first pick of the star player, doesn't it? You've got all those options to start thinking about, haven't you, Dan? And I think the minute that this Super League potentially, if it comes and it starts, then I think, as you say, you will have other money people thinking, well, how can we get in on this? What can we do? How can we revamp it? And all those options for me will then end up being on the table. And for all we know, in 10, 15 years' time, football isn't, we think we're legacy fans now. In 10 years' time, who knows? What we knew as football is nothing like what we're seeing football to be anymore.
Oh, I think football goes beyond borders within 10 years, whether we like it or not, and whether it's a pirate league or approved. I think the dissolving of domestic leagues in some form or cross-border, even you look at the Dutch and Belgians trying to get together and build a bigger league. They're not too sure how that would work with UEFA allocation, but obviously that plan's been blown out of the water with all of this. But it's happening in the background, isn't it? Everyone's on the pursuit of money. And Matthew, two teams are always looking for a bit more money. Carl mentioned them earlier. Celtic and Rangers. So if the Big Six did leave the Premier League, could this finally be their entry point to English football?
I think it could be, because you're going to need some big clubs and some big names to sort of fill the gap. And whilst you're losing at Man United, Liverpool, China, and all that lot, they won't make up for it. But if anyone has ever had the pleasure, and it is a pleasure, of having Celtic or Rangers come to their ground for a pre-season game, you know that they pack out the place, and you know that they will be very much in terms of, money and, fans coming to the games, they will be a welcome addition to anywhere. They will go anywhere up and down the country, because they are big clubs, and they will pack out wherever they go. But I don't think they would, because that would effectively kill Scottish football dead. The only way that it would work is, and you mentioned the sort of Belgian and the Dutch league merging. The only way it would ever work is if you were to fully integrate the English and the Scottish leagues, and even if you want to include the Welsh leagues as well, to get Cardiff, Swansea, and all that lot in there. I think that would be the only real way that it would ever work, because I don't think Celtic and Rangers could ever leave Scotland totally behind. Yes, they may bring them with them and, have a bit of a head start, but I just don't see it leave them leaving Scottish football to effectively die in a sense. I just don't see that happening.
I see exactly what you mean, but there's another angle to take into account with Celtic and Rangers, and that's their push to have cult teams, or B teams as we better know them, in their setup. Now, there's a lot of pushback against that, because it's never happened and people don't really want to see that in Scottish football, because the two biggest teams should be getting even more assistance. However, there is a view that they could be used as a placeholder, that the Colts would then operate within Scottish football, and then Celtic and Rangers could move and say goodbye to Scottish football. So you are right in that if they did go and made a clean break for themselves, then Scottish football's marketing power would diminish overnight to minuscule levels. But if there was still some legacy of them being in the setup, then that could just keep them ticking over to a slightly less diminished level, if that makes sense. But anyway, we have literally run out of time. We've not spoken about any football. Man City not getting a quadruple. Tottenham have sacked their manager. Not got time. The two teams meet in the Carabao Cup final. We'll talk about that next week. And I'm sure we'll talk about European Super League with many weeks to come, because this one is not going away. But I need to thank my guests for two fantastic performances this afternoon. Matthew, thank you ever so much for your time, mate. I hope you enjoyed that one.
Yeah, absolute pleasure, as always.
Cheers, mate. And Cole, thank you for wearing the captain's armband this week. A pleasure to chat to you once more.
Yeah, it was really good. Really enjoyed that. As you say, Dan, I think this will keep us in food for quite a while. but yeah, it was a pleasure with you guys this afternoon.
Top man. Right, thank you to you two and also to the listeners out there. And with that said, it just leaves me to say that my name's Dan Tracy. This is The Real Football Cast. And until next time, goodbye.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.